Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 5 of the Today's Knuckleball Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by FanRag Sports. Today is April 23rd, and we are in the 5th week of this, Greg, and having a lot of fun doing it, so just keeping my fingers crossed that we don't have any issues with Blog Talk Radio tonight. But as always, I'm joined with my co-host, Greg Jewett, from Today's Knuckleball as well. Greg, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay, even though it snowed again here in Syracuse.
Yeah, it's almost May, so that's gonna be. Luckily, it's cold in Boston, but it's not snowy weather. It's about, you know, it's about 40 degrees, but it is chilly. Follow Greg on Twitter at gjewett9. Follow myself at tking978, and follow my knuckleballs at my knuckleballs. Today's knuckleball at my knuckleballs. And if anybody has any questions they want us to answer, you can tweet to any one of those Twitter handles, and we will. Be sure to get that out of the show. Note that I want to point out, John Axford today got the save for the Colorado Rockies, and that was due to Adam Ottavino being unavailable with general soreness. I'm not too concerned about it, and I think Axford is probably the next guy in line now that Troy Hawkins has been placed on the DL. Ottavino got a win yesterday and was clocked in at 96 and 97 miles an hour, so probably just a rest day for Ottavino. Greg, any concern there with you?
No, from the sounds of it, based upon the beat writer from the Rockies, he said Ottavino went to the manager today and said that he was a little sore and just asked not to be used if the situation arose. So those clearly just giving him a day off. They've ridden him hard early on, so I think it's good to listen to your body. So I'd rather have him tell the manager, give me the day off, so go out there and throw through a dead arm and give up a 3-run inning. So, kudos to Ottavino for verbalizing that to his manager. And, hey, at least we know now who the clear handcuff is in the Rockies in case anything does persist. So Ottavino's number one, and move up Axford to the number two slot.
Yeah, and hopefully Ottavino can hold this job and stay healthy, because I really don't want to see John Axford getting saved chances in Colorado. Ottavino has been great. He has a 43% strikeout rate, which is, as you may guess, pretty decent. So our friend Masahiro Tanaka looked pretty good again today, Greg. What did you see? Did you like what you saw?
I only got to see a little of it. I caught a little bit of the game when my son and I went to get a haircut this afternoon, but I would like to see the ratio of fastballs that he threw. I'm sure the cold temperatures that were in Detroit, like here in Syracuse, and that you're experiencing, it doesn't really make batters want to get up there and dig in. So good, but again, he shut down a good Tigers lineup that did score runs yesterday, the day before. So this is 2 good outings in a row. So one of our fellow writers for FanRag asked us if he would take Tanaka, and who was the other piece in that?
Shane Green.
Tanaka and Green for James Shields, and we both said to take it before Tanaka start today, and today probably just validated it. So, you know, if you can get 2 good arms like that for Shields, who's a nice pitcher but just doesn't have the upside, I would say take that. So, you know, well, it is what it is. You just hang on to Tanaka for as long as his elbow will hang on, and who knows, he might go longer than people thought.
Yeah, and on the Shane Green note, he gets the Indians tomorrow at home. So Tanaka, yeah, he pitched a pretty good game. 94 pitches, threw 6 1/3, only allowed 3 hits, a run, a couple walks, 6 Ks, 5 ground ball out, 8 fly balls. It is what it is with Tanaka. If you know, as long as the elbow hangs on, he'll be at the very minimum serviceable. Those first 2 starts were kind of ugly, but that past couple of starts have looked really good. So definitely a welcome sight for fantasy owners, and especially for you, Greg, being a Yankee fan, you guys are going to need Tanaka. It's not going to be looking pretty.
No, I just want I just want them to stink.
just get it over with and you know, reboot the rebuild there.
Yeah, we'll see if the Mets can come in and put get us back to earth.
Yeah, right. Mets 11 in a row today, right?
Yeah.
So Addison Russell, Greg, we kind of missed out on the news because we had an awkward time slot in relation to his call up. Anyway, he got called up a couple of nights ago. Actually, the news broke late. I was going to bed, and it was about midnight or 12:30 on the East Coast, and I just was checking my Twitter feed one more time just to see if, you know, I typically do that just to make sure I didn't miss out on anything that I need to do before I kind of hit the sack. But Addison Russell was called up and got a hit today. Had an RBI double today, went 1-for-4, 0-for-5 yesterday, though. Obviously, good sign for Cubs fans, good sign for fantasy owners. My opinion, Russell probably warrants an ad in all formats, even 10-team leagues, just purely based on his pedigree. Greg, what do you think we get out of Russell this year?
See, I don't know. I'm a little more tepid on him in a 10-team league, especially if, you know, as much as I was to Wong in the preseason, if he's going to bat eighth, it hurts his value. So game one, Russell batted ninth. Today he batted seventh, which helps a little bit. But the pitcher was still – did the pitcher bat eighth today? I didn't see that lineup.
I think, did bat eighth again.
Okay. So, I mean, he's still just one slot ahead of the pitcher. So the lower you are in the order, the harder it is to get those counting stats. It's hard to get runs. I mean, he did get the RBI today, which is nice. But I see him like maybe what? 12 home runs, maybe 11, 12 steals, maybe a 12 and 12 guy. I mean, there's value in that at middle infield, but we'll see how the average goes. I say 12 team enough, he's a must add. I'm not sure about 10.
On that note, Kyle Hendricks hit eighth, and then Jonathan Herrera played third base and hit ninth. Pretty weird to see Chris Bryant out in center field, huh?
So whatever it takes, baby.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Bring them all up. They'll find a spot for all of them. Put Javier Baez behind the plate if you have to. So with Russell, I think you're kind of spot on there. I think, double-double in homers and steals is probably a good bet. He's obviously got a little bit more power than he does speed. I'm going to be interested to see what he does in the batting average department. He's been a really good hitter in the minor leagues, just a good overall hitter, does a little bit of everything. And, you know, his lineup spot will matter some. I mean, it doesn't look likely that he's going to be hitting in the two hole anytime soon with you know, the way that Castro is going right now. But, pedigree alone, I think he's worth an ad. And, it remains to be seen what he does. But from this point forward, obviously, we must own the keepers and dynasties, and he's already owned probably in all those formats.
In my 13 team holy, he was already rostered when the announcement broke through on that one. So let's meld this one together. We can kill two birds with one stone. Devin Travis, he has been batting second or leadoff for the Blue Jays. So we'll throw out the first 3 weeks from Travis where he's been hot. Going forward, who would you rather have, Devin Travis or Addison Russell?
I want Travis for this year. Because, even with Reyes out of the lineup, he hit leadoff with Reyes out. He's hitting second with him there. I think his homer to fly ball rate is ridiculous, but he's also hitting at the moment. He also has he's the leader in fly ball distance or batted ball distance. In the major leagues, Devin Travis. So he's going to score a ton of runs if he hits at the top of that lineup. Enough pop and speed to matter. Going to go double-double. I actually think he could produce something similar to Russell, maybe, in the homer and steal department. But if he stays at the top, near the top of that Blue Jay lineup, there's going to be tons and tons of runs coming.
And I agree with you. So I think even with Russell coming up and having to hire for this year, I think Travis is the better play, but long-term it's probably Russell. But the nice thing about Travis is him and I remember doing, I tweeted out a chart preseason with their AAA numbers versus the Pedroias last year in the AAA. and their slash lines are almost identical to three of them. So, I mean, Travis was kind of an under-the-radar guy. He had to pop. And, again, he doesn't have the ceiling that Russell does. But for this year alone, I wouldn't be dropping Travis right now and adding Russell. I'd stay put in that scenario.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And one thing I do want to add about Russell is that everybody that's come into contact with him has said he's unbelievably polished. He's 21 years old, I believe, and unbelievably polished thing, you know, that they kind of said about him. So that's, you know, something to keep in mind. But, yeah, I would go grab Russell, and I think, I don't know, maybe it depends on the roster construction and it's in team league, I guess. But,
yeah,
definitely was.
And that's cool. So, I mean, the Cubs are adding nice. It seems like when I saw the interview with Chris Bryant, he was well-spoken. Not only are they adding talent, it looks like they're adding solid people. And you put them with a cerebral manager like Madden, I mean, he might be okay. He might be able to guide them into something good this year. It's just like a nice feel. It's different. You know, the Cubs players have been tweeting out, we wouldn't be coming back in these situations the year before. So I think they're buying in.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw this, but a bunch of people have retweeted it. Do you see the thing Miguel Montero was saying on Twitter, and people would see that?
I see a couple of his tweets come through, yes.
Yeah, it's like he's not like really great at English yet, it doesn't seem like, but his tweets are funny.
He's like, yeah, we're good, you know? That's the hashtag,
yeah,
right?
We are good. So that's good to see, and definitely be, you know, for baseball fans, purely, it's pretty cool to see the Cubs relevant again, and definitely going to be a lot of excitement coming out of there with that, I mean, really good core of young players. It almost reminds me of we don't know how it's going to turn out yet, but it's kind of one of those Yankee cores, all those guys they developed in. So time will tell.
Yeah.
So I'll let you take this one away, Greg. Mark Melanson got a save today, had a strikeout. Velocity is still down, but it was nice to see him come in and throw a clean ninth inning after a Tony Watson save, I believe it was yesterday. So give us the breakdown on the Pirates' pen. Do you think, are you handcuffing Melanson, or do you think not really much concern there? You think he'll be fine?
If I own Melanson in a couple of leagues, so I think I will be handcuffing. In one league, I was already able to because there's no FOB in that. So I did add Tony Watson just in case. I had a different reliever in there that wasn't getting saves anyway, so it was a speculative add. So I'd rather have the guy just in case he does take over. I wanted to cover my bases there. If you're a Melanson owner, I think you add Watson. If you're purely speculating on staves, you can add Watson, but I wouldn't blow a big amount of FOB on him. I would do a 10% or lower bid this weekend as kind of a wait and see. He does have an upside arm. I mean, he's very good in the bullpen. And you saw the blueprint yesterday. They went Camarino in the seventh. They had Hughes in the eighth, but he melted down, so they had to bring in Watson, and that's why he had to do the two innings. I was watching that game closely just to see how they were going to structure the pen because it was tweeted out earlier in the day that Melanson wasn't going to pitch. So he had yesterday off, so it was a perfect scenario to see how it would go. Melanson needs the velocity to come back. I mean, he doesn't have to get all the way back to where he was last year, but it would be nice to see him starting to get to 90, hopefully by the end of next week. If that doesn't happen, though, there might be something underlying it, you know. I remember the tweets about Greg Holland's diminished velocity, and then he finally landed on a disabled list. So hopefully Melanson can get through it. Hopefully it's just a dead arm. I would like to see the velocity come back up, but today was encouraging. So I was nervous because at my haircut I saw he was going to get in, and later on I pulled it up to look, and I was almost nervous, but I saw the clean inning. So I took a little sigh of relief after I wrote up Melanson in today's reliever column.
Yeah, I'm with you. It definitely was a nice gift to see him come out and throw a clean inning, even though the velocity is still down. I don't know if you saw this either, but Eno Saris tweeted out a cool list of closers. I don't remember the threshold for the success, but the point of the list was to show closers who had had X amount of success with a fastball below 90 miles an hour, I believe. And the list wasn't pretty outside Trevor Hoffman. So you're right, it's going to be imperative that Melanson get that velocity back in the near future here, and maybe, you know, I wouldn't rule out a trip to the DL there to kind of, you know, get him kind of rolling again. But I do think he keeps the job, and I do think I just think he writes the ship, because Clint Hurdle says, you know, there is, and again, we know better not to trust managers, and probably silly for falling into that trap, but he's reiterated time and time again, there is no injury, he's just working through something. So hopefully that something is workable, and hopefully that changes in the near future. But again, nice to see him come out for a clean frame. So you have a couple situations to monitor here, Greg, and I'll let you take these away again too, because you are the relief expert of the two of us. So why don't you go ahead and give us a breakdown on Mr. Barrett on the Nationals and a situation in Toronto that you're monitoring, and throw in the Mets at the end if you want.
Yeah, it's more about Drew Storen. You know, I just get a little nervous because he hasn't started out the year strong. There's still that postseason hangover from the game that he gave up the home run in. So I just question a little bit because there's not a lot there. The backup, Casey Jansen, he's still rehabbing. He's never been a healthy guy to begin with the last couple of years. So it's more of just like a spec. And of course, Barrett did give up a run today, but before today, he's been looking really strong. So it's more of, if you own Drew Storen, it might not hurt to just throw Aaron Barrett for a dollar or add him in a deeper roster if you can do so. It's more of I'm just kind of keeping an eye on the Nationals, seeing what's happening. But, you know, the longer their struggles go, the more pressure there's going to be. And if Storen blows a couple of more saves, it's really going to get to a frustration level. So the Nationals have plenty of season left. They're probably still the best team in that division. But there's things perking up already. Storen, slow start. Now Zimmerman's coming out with a possible plantar fasciitis thing like Dickerson had. They were saying he was running the bases gingerly today. It just seems like but on the good front is that you and I did take note that Rendon is supposed to start his AA rehab in Harrisburg tomorrow. So that is some good news for the Nationals. So, and they need it. They need some good news. They need some good mojo because the Mets' hot start is just exacerbating their slow one.
Sorry, Greg. I was going to say the Rendon news is good for a lot of people outside of just the Nationals too. So.
Oh yeah, my one of my fantasy teams needs him back desperately, my keeper league. Mm-hmm. But the other bullpens I'm just keeping an eye on is the K rate for Castro in Toronto has gone down ever since his beginning there. He's not. I mean, yesterday he did get a 1 1/3 inning save, but he only got one strikeout, and it was a called strike 3, and it was borderline. So he's not just blowing the ball by people. They've got a couple of guys in the bullpen, a couple of veterans, former pitchers, former starters that have been looking good, and Liam Hendricks and Marco Estrada. So I don't think it's imminent, like it's going to happen tomorrow, but. That Toronto bullpen is still a work in progress, so I wouldn't be too comfortable with Castro. So that's another one I'm watching. And as you pointed out, Juris Familia is really taking this job and running with it. Initially, I thought Parnell, because when at the beginning of the season, when Mejia had the job, Terry Collins was like, you know, I'm still going to look at Parnell when he gets back. He's our guy. And that stance has kind of faded a little bit. I think Familia has Collins' trust right now, and the Mets are in a hot streak. So when Parnell gets back, I think he's going to start working in the 7th and 8th inning, and I think he would have to have really, really strong outings to unseat Familia at this point. And I think Mets fans would be in complete agreement with that. And Familia, his secondary pitching speeds have gone up this year. His slider's a mile per hour faster, as is his changeup. So he's throwing really well. He was a former starter, too. So he threw 77 innings last year. It looked good. And he's looking even better right now.
Yeah, I'll touch on all of those. I'm not as concerned with Storen as you are, but I'll yield to you on that front because, you know, it is early in the season, and he has already blown a save, and he hasn't looked as good as we probably would like to see him look, but I have kind of checked into the Barrett numbers, and you know, he's got some pretty, pretty good numbers there. So, okay. Yeah, you could probably do worse than speculate there if you have a roster spot burning a hole in your pocket. But again, I'm probably not as concerned with Storen as you are, and I'm not an owner in any league either. But Toronto, is a situation that worries me. Castro, I think, is very, very close to kind of unraveling, or just that bullpen being moved to a committee type. If I'm a Castro owner, I'm not thrilled after we've seen, you know, Brett Cecil get removed from that job really quick. And as you mentioned, Castro did get a little lucky last night to nail down that save. So another thing I would mention is Aaron Sanchez has been pretty atrocious in the rotation. He had 7 walks last night. I think his next start is against the Red Sox. So I think it'll be interesting to see maybe down the line if he gets moved to the bullpen. That's a name we could hear at the back end there at some point during the season. And from a Mets perspective, I don't think there's any way, and we've talked about this on the show the past couple of weeks, actually, you know, we were both pretty confident that Parnell was going to hop right back in and have a shot to get the closer role there in New York. But the way Familia has pitched completely lights out, he's got 8 saves, and he's been really, really good. So I think it's going to take a little more than just a couple of good Parnell outings when he's coming back to unseat Familia. I think it's going to take a meltdown on Familia's part as well. And obviously Parnell coming back from Tommy John surgery. So the velocity isn't quite there for him either, but Familia has certainly taken this job and called it his own, that's for sure. So I'm definitely a little more comfortable today or over the past couple of days as a Familia owner than I was, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely should be. All right, let's transition here. Enough relievers right now. Let's get to one of your crushes. Now, in the preseason, you did I believe you did a write up on Jay Bruce, and we have your love affair for Steven Souza. So, you posed this to me in a question last night, and I said let's put it to the pod here. So I'll give you the floor first on this one. So rest of the season, who do you want, Steven Souza or Jay Bruce?
Yeah, the reason why I asked this question was because I was doing my nightly look over of my fantasy leagues, and probably 80% of which I own Steven Souza. And I was wondering whether or not it would be an upgrade for me to package Souza in a deal and get Jay Bruce in a package deal. So I was kind of doing some research and, you know, kind of throwing out text messages to people that I trust, kind of gauging opinions, which is why I texted you. And I came to the conclusion that I would rather have Souza for the rest of the year. I'll tell you why. Bruce, the power is kind of there for him right now, but I'm not all that confident that he can become, again, the player he was before his down 2014. He has trouble with the shift. I mean, a lot of trouble. And he always struck out, but he's having more trouble now with the shift over the past, in 2014, the beginning of this year, than he was in years past. Maybe that's because he's getting shifted more. But I just, for some reason, even though he's so young, Bruce, he's not even 30 yet, Carriage is going to be a severe drain. And I just don't see a way in which he can even return investment where he was taken this year. And he was a discount this year, and I did write him up early in the season. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be the knee, and it didn't seem to be the knee last year when he came back after the surgery. He missed a couple of weeks when he was slated to miss over a month. Because he did steal a career high, I think it was 11 bases or something last year. So
12.
Something's 12. Something's going on with Bruce, and I think it's just a combination of the shift. And I think you know, he's having a hard time adapting to that. So Souza, the average is going to come down, of course. His strikeout rate is massive. It's over 35%. So the batting average, as it stands right now, is not going to be sustainable. Maybe he can hit 250, and I think he has enough power and speed to really maybe even become a top 50 player. So I think Steven Souza's right there for on par with the 2020 season. 250, 2020, I will take over, you know, Jay Bruce, who may hit 220 and hit 25 homers and steal a handful of bases. So give me Souza.
Yeah, see, I was really torn on this because, you know, I like the Zips projections. I think they do a really nice job with them. And Zips, the rest of the season, has Jay Bruce with 26 home runs, 10 more steals, which I'm a little surprised about, but that's based upon last year's total. And they have him to hit 251 and slug 464. I mean, right now he's hitting 189 and slugging 377, and that's just those aren't numbers you think are Jay Bruce, or like Jay Bruce would produce. Zips has Souza the rest of the season with 15 more home runs and 16 stolen bases, but they only have that for 103 games. They didn't really project him to get a big amount because he only played 96 games in AAA last year, so his numbers are a little skewed down. So if you gave him the same amount of games played, then you're probably a year into that 2020 barrier. So the funny thing is I guess you want the arrow pointing up and not down. So it's, I guess the savvy baseball player is going to say buy low on Bruce and cash in on those stats. But until he makes an adjustment to that shift, I don't know. I mean, finally, Marlon Byrd hit a home run today for Cincinnati. So maybe that bottom part of the order will wake up a little bit from those guys down. But as of today, it's hard to say to give up Souza to get him, although, like I said, it could be the savvy thing to do, but I think I might play it safe and stay with you and stay with Souza right now.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that, you know, playing it safe 3 weeks into the season is going with a guy that was undrafted in the vast majority of leagues. I was an early adopter on the Souza train, and I was lucky to get him pretty much across the board. I think I'm only missing him in one league, and you know, he did get off to a bit of a slow start, but ever since he's just mashed the ball. And his home runs are not wall scrapers. His home runs are bombs, to put it, you know, easily. And you know, he's getting on base and he likes to run. And he's walking at an almost 12% clip. Obviously the 407 BABIP is comical and it's gonna come way down, but
yes.
If he can hit 250 and continue on the pace he's on with the homers and steals, it may sound like a bit of a stretch, but I think we could be seeing a little bit of a George Springer out of Steven Souza this year. What do you think?
No, I think that's a fair comp, and right now he's ahead of Springer on all of the statistics. He's had a better start, so you never know. Maybe that extra year in AAA did him a little bit of good. So, and the other nice thing is that he's batting second, so he has
right.
the opportunity to steal more often. Whereas Bruce, sometimes he's getting on base as batting sixth with two outs. He's probably not going to go steal a base because I don't know if there's a point to do it. You know, it's weird. What
yeah.
kind of world do we live in where Zach Cozart is producing and Jay Bruce is not?
Yeah, Zach Cozart. Good old Zach Cozart. Man,
it's unreal.
It's a wild time to be alive, Greg. I'll put it that way.
Isn't he in the top 10 on the player radar?
Yeah, yeah. And just for kicks, you don't think he's worth an ad? Do you?
I can't. He's 30 years old. I just, no. I think he's in a hot
yeah,
streak. That's great. But, no, the problem is if you buy in now on the hot streak, then you're going to own him for when he hits the wall and sinks again and realizes that he's at Cozart. So, no, if you buy him now, you're minimizing all of his value. You've already lost it.
Yeah, I don't really think there's any sleeper potential there or anything like that. Like you said, he's 30. So I'm going to let you go ahead and I know you wrote about catchers and potential replacements for Jonathan Lucroy and Travis Darno, so I'm going to let you go to town.
All right, well, it's a tough world in catchers right now. There's not a lot of production at that position as we speak. It's been a tough road to hoe, and I think people are getting frustrated. Some people took, like, Wilson Ramos earlier in the year. They speculated on him, or Yasmani Grandal, and they haven't had a hot start to validate what they thought was worth their draft pick. So some people are dropping them. Their ownerships are down to about 50% on ESPN. But it's tough because there's been so many injuries. Travis Darno got off to a great start. He's out. You know, Jonathan Lucroy was actually scuffling, so his owners might benefit from him being hurt right now because they're going to take him out of the lineup for a little bit and at least maybe see a little bit of improvement. I mean, I thought Lucroy was going to have a breakout year, but the hamstring injury early in camp kind of held him back a little bit, and then he's just part of the funk that is the Milwaukee Brewers this year. So it's been tough. Some of the younger guys, one of the guys I kind of like, and he's really, really low owned right now, is JT Realmuto in Miami. He's been playing, I think, 5 of the last 7 days for Miami, and they've been batting him up around 6. So he's not a huge power guy, but for somebody that can help you a little bit in average. And he did steal 18 bases last year in the minors. So you could get a little surprise production and stolen bases out of your catcher position, which on a lot of teams is a bonus. So if you have a catcher that isn't hitting 220 and swiping a few bags and maybe scores a few runs, I think you take it. He has good doubles power, and the power might develop later on. And I think him and Plawecki are worth a look for just like a cheap option to throw in there and see what they can do. Catcher this year, you know, a lot of people hate catcher in fantasy, and this year is doing everything it can to justify those folks. People in two catcher leagues, it's been rough, and one of my favorites was John Jaso, and he still can't lift a bat. So, yeah, I picked up Real Muto in both of the leagues I own Jaso, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I like Real Muto too. Can do some things, and like you said, you know, if you lost a Darno or you lost a Lucroy, you're probably digging pretty thin there. Other guys that I think might be available in some leagues are Jason Castro, who is, you know, he's not like the world on fire, but he's solid. A guy I like, Yasmani Grandal, kind of doesn't start any Kershaw games, but I still think there's upside there too.
Yes, there
any
is.
Other?
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of just have to hang tight. Lucroy's going to be out a while. So is Darno. So you kind of just have to hang tight kind of just scrape from the bottom there and keep an eye on what's going on in the bottom basement catcher ranks. And I think Blake Swihart might be up at some point in the next month and a half here. So that's something to watch as well.
Yes, definitely. That, at some point, they got to be tired of that Sandy Leon, Ryan Hannigan mix.
Oh, God. Greg, it's, you know, guys are second and third, and Ryan Hannigan's coming up. I can just turn the TV off and walk away. It's just although Hannigan did hit a home run the other night when I was at the game, which was surprising.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, who's that guy with the blonde mullet? Oh, that's Ryan Hannigan. why does Don Mattingly hate Alex Guerrero?
Don Mattingly hates fantasy people, period. I think Mattingly played a lot of his years in New York on teams that were chock full of veterans, and it's an old boy network, and you take care of the veterans, and the rookies are almost forced in Mattingly's world to just kick the door down the play. You know, I mean, he's got Jock Peterson, and he bats an eighth, a high OBP guy with some pop.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he slot in second in that lineup and let Puig hit third and just let the rest of the order fall in line? And then you got Gonzalez fourth. And I guess that makes too much sense. I don't know. You know,
right.
And you can split up the lefties and the righties at the top of the order. You can have Rollinson lead off as a switch hitter. You go left, right, left, and you go right down the bottom. Anyways, I digress. Guerrero has more RBIs as a pinch hitter than Justin Turner and Uribe combined for the season, playing first, third base as starters. More as a pinch hitter.
Yeah.
He's got five RBIs as a pinch hitter. Those other two guys combined have one RBI and 40-some-odd at-bats playing third base for the Dodgers. And you can say it's defense or it's whatever, but the Dodgers need to score runs. They lost another extra inning game today, and Guerrero was taken out in the seventh inning, even though he had a home run in the game. So, I don't know what Guerrero has to do besides date his daughter, or I don't know. It's mind-boggling, but Mattingly, and if you don't want to play him at third base, put him out in left field. I mean, what's Carl Crawford giving you at this time? See what the kid can do.
The problem with Crawford is that they owe him what do they still owe him? $120 million. Yeah, and I think you're right. I'm so sick of seeing Alex Guerrero talk on Twitter when it's such a simple fix. Juan Uribe, put him on the bench. I mean, put him on the bench. And, you know, you talked about how they pulled Guerrero out of the lineup today in the seventh inning, you said?
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to get another at-bat in that game if, you know, he's in the game. And who knows? He probably hits another home run for him. It's just absurd. But I actually wanted to dig into Guerrero a little deeper. I actually wanted to get your take on, what do you think? So given a full slate of at-bats, let's assume, you know, something happens and Alex Guerrero is granted a starting job somewhere on the diamond. If he's given, say, 500 at-bats, what do you think he could do numbers-wise?
I was a little skeptical on him, and I still don't know how he is as non-base percentage guy. But, I mean, he's looked better than I thought he would be, to put it simply. So I'll say we'll go with maybe a 260 average, but he's got 20-plus home run power, it would appear, right now. I mean, let's find out. I mean, he could flame out and he could not be it, but if he's going to be a part of your team in the next 3-4 years, put him out there and let him play and find out. I mean, these other guys, I mean, Juan Uribe is not a part of the long-term plan. I mean, I know they were built to win this year, but it's so far it needs a little tweaking. So I'm not even a Dodgers fan, but I'm saying let the kid play and see what he can do. So, like I said, I'd say 260 average, 20-something home runs, but right now for the Dodgers, that would be a welcome addition.
Yeah, he actually doesn't have a walk yet this year, but again, that's not anywhere near
playing
time.
That's why I don't think he could maintain a higher batting average, but, you know, this day and age, a 250 guy who hits 20-something home runs has a lot of value.
Yeah, definitely a different era. But in the low minus, he was had some pretty nice walk rates, again, small samples. But I do think there's actually batting average upside here. I think he's one of those kind of rare breeds who can kind of do that without having a huge walk rate. I don't know, give him 500 plate appearances, I say it's 270 with 22-23 home runs. I think that's pretty fair assessment. But, it's embarrassing for Dodgers fans. I see them all over Twitter and just like, and for fantasy owners too. I mean, he's just letting a nice bat go to waste. So let's touch on Chris Carter here. He was dropped everywhere, so I'm seeing him actually re-added everywhere. It's like, okay, now that he's hit his first home run, everybody's going to go at him. I assume you're going to be on the camp. It's like, let's see him. Is he actually going to hit one this year? And once he does, boom. He was dropped in like 5 of my leagues and added in all of them again today. So you do mention his first home run was April 22nd last year as well. He went on to hit a whole bunch more. So, yeah, it is a little freaky, a little eerie. And did you read it was in the same park, too?
I think it was.
Yeah. It was pretty freaky.
So, and I made this mistake last year because I took Chris Carter in the FSWA league that I was in versus Jason Collette and Michael Florio and some of the other Michael Radford was in that league. I mean, there were some heavy hitters in there. And I made the mistake. I got frustrated after the first month and I dropped him. And then that's when he went on the home run tear because in a league where you get rewarded for walks and power, that's a great place to own Chris Carter. And my own impatience bit me in the ass. So I had Chris Carter in my AL-only league this year, and I've got him in, like, I think one other league. So I've held tight with him. So last night his home run did get on the teams that I had. So here's the deal. He's going to hit, like, 230, but he can still hit 35 home runs the rest of the year. So if you need power, then you hold on to him. To drop somebody that soon that you took, because you probably had to take him in the first 12 rounds, I don't see why you would drop somebody that fast unless it was an injury. So sit tight, folks. It's not even May yet.
So you think 230, 35 homers, Greg?
Yeah. He's going to hit for power. That's his calling card. I mean, everyone knew the Astros this year were going to be a high strikeout team, but hit some home runs. So once they start hitting their stride, and they're going to, I think they have to start to get a few better swings. He's not pretty, but you know, when he gets a hold of the ball, it's going to fly. I really like to see Springer have some better at-bats. You know, I'm starting to get a little nervous about him, too. But, again, it's early. You draft them at these places. Let them do their thing. I think the Astros are a team that on any day they can score 12 runs, and on any day they can get shut out and strike out 12 times. That's their MO right now.
Yeah, it certainly is. I'm just kind of... it's kind of odd to see people freaking out about it. All you have to do is look at the roster going into the spring, and you knew this was going to be the way it was going to go. Yeah, I'm with you. I think I wouldn't have dropped Carter if I drafted him. I actually didn't draft him in any leagues, but I wouldn't have dropped him. And anywhere he's available, go grab him. It doesn't matter that he hit a home run yesterday or not. You know he's going to hit at least 30, And there's going to be weeks, especially in head-to-head leagues, he's going to have big-time value because there's going to be weeks where he gets, you know, three or four homers in a week and does that for a 2-3 week span. He's gonna you know, have some big-time push in those leagues. So go ahead, mm-hmm. Sorry, I already talked to him to begin with. All right, so Billy Butler is looks like he's kind of turning his career around a little bit in Oakland. What do you think, Greg?
I'm actually okay with it. Preseason, I was kind of like, you know what, Butler might be better than we think he's going to be. And I think he's a little motivated. I think he thought he was always going to be a Kansas City Royal. And when they let him walk, I think it gave him a little chip on his shoulder. So I like it. He's having good at-bats. He's batting fourth. You know, the A's are always a spunky kind of lineup. So, yeah, I'm okay with it. I think Billy Butler right now is who he is. But, you know, don't go crazy. He's an 18-home run guy who's going to get RBIs because he bats fourth in the lineup and put up a nice 285 average possibly. So if that's what you're planning on, then you won't be disappointed. If you think Billy Butler is going to hit 25 home runs, then you're setting yourself up for a little bit of a fall. But I think the way he started is who he is. He's a professional hitter. He's patient at the plate, and he's almost like a perfect athletic because that's what they like.
Professional hitter reminds me of the Matt Stairs adage. Professional hitter, Matt Stairs. So I'm not as up in the with it as you are, maybe. 408 BABIP, obviously not a great park. And one of the things that's been moving in the wrong direction with Butler is his ground ball rate, which has come as which has affected his fly ball rate awfully bad.
Mm-hmm.
His current ground ball rate is almost 54%, which represents a career worse still, 4% worse than it was last year. So the homers are not going to continue to come at this kind of clip. I say maybe he hits 10 or 11, maybe, if things kind of go right. But with all those ground balls, it's going to be hard to hit, you know, 15 plus home runs, especially at in Oakland there. So good, decent middle infield option. He'll hit for a decent batting average. He'll drive in some runs, and not much in the power sense, though, at least as far as I can tell yet. So do you have anything else? Do you want to add anything about the Dodger bullpen? I know we already railed Don Mattingly enough, but if you feel like you want to add anything, maybe you know, who do we want in that 10, Greg? Do we even want to touch that right now?
The arm I like the best is Yimi Garcia. I like his K rate. He's kind of got a wild motion, so he's hard to pick the ball up from. And I thought there'd be a point where maybe him or Baez could get the ninth inning to give it to Baez today. The bigger problem was the one tweet I read was that 13 pitches by Peralta today, none of them went above 84 miles per hour. He didn't throw a fastball. So I don't know if maybe he's trying to pitch through something or if he just doesn't trust his fastball right now or what it was. But he walked two people in that two-thirds of an inning. Nothing seems to make sense with Don Mattingly. Like I said, the arm that I would like the most would be Yimi Garcia. Whether he gives him a chance, I don't know. But the Dodgers can't get Kenley Jansen back fast enough. That's one decision that Mattingly can't mess up.
Yeah, I like Garcia too. He does have a crazy motion, but he throws pretty hard. And I don't know, it's a mess over there. I don't even want to think about it, but unless someone
No, that and the Toronto bullpen are two that are really tough to navigate right now.
Yeah. Cody Allen, I think you and I are both in agreement. Stick with him. Don't dump him. He has the ability to be a top-10 closer pretty easily if he gets the ship turned around here. Had a really bad outing the other night against the White Sox, but has since come in and thrown a clean ninth inning in a non-save situation. I'm sure you're with me there. You're sticking with
mm-hmm.
Allen. I'm buying low on Allen. I don't know if you're in the same boat as I am.
Yeah. I think if you're looking for saves in the league, it wouldn't hurt to poke around the Cody Allen owners because they might sell him for about 30 cents on the dollar right now. Say, hey, man, he's got a couple of rough outings. You know, Brian Shaw's looking good. I think you might want to trade him. You know, just see. Kick the tires, never hurts to ask. You might be surprised at what you can get them for.
I agree, I'm with you. Archie Bradley, Greg, the talk of the town, Arizona's top pitching prospect, come in, and he's got a really cool 1.45 ERA, but I'm sure you're going to have some problems to tell us about that, right?
Well, he's got to eliminate those walks. You can't put that many people on base. For the same reason you were highlighting on Aaron Sanchez, I think he had, what, 6 walks last night?
Seven.
You're playing with fire. If you play, you got a better offensive team than Texas, then it's going to come back to bite you. So I like this first night. He had a lot of moxie going up against Clayton Kershaw. A team like that ramped him up. I think he can be a very good pitcher. He's got 2 good pitches right now. He still needs that third pitch to come around. But I think he's a good spot start guy. So if he's got a couple of nice landings, then I would put him in there. So if he's playing a really good offensive team in Arizona or if he's pitching in Colorado, I think you need to watch it from the outside looking in. So just manage his starts, but I think he can be productive. But just be careful. Tread lightly.
Yeah, I would tread really lightly here. I'd walk on eggshells. 1.45 ERA, 3.71 FIP. He's got a 84% left on base, and his strikeout to walk rate is a pretty awful 1. So I'm not too excited about Bradley, at least not currently. Doesn't have to be
he's deeper league. In a 12 team, he's a streamer. In a 15, you have to take a chance on his upside. But, 12 team and lower, he's more of a stream option than an everyday pitcher.
You're right. Pending returns, Drew Smyly will pitch for Tampa on April 24th, I believe. Actually, I have no idea who it's against. I was going to say Boston, but I'm not sure that's right. So Smyly will be back, and he will have a pitch count. But Smyly is an ad in pretty much all leagues, I think, at this point. He was great after the David Price trade once he went to Tampa last year. So Smyly will pitch again tomorrow. Anthony Rendon starts a rehab assignment tomorrow at AA. See how long it takes to get back and ready. What do you think? Do you think Rendon's going to be a little gingerly on the base pass when you get back? I don't think we're going to see 20 steals out of him again this year.
No. Again, we've talked about this before, but he had 1 steal in the minors the year before last year. So I think if he can hit for power and help spark that lineup, you want him for the runs scored and the home runs and the RBIs. So they should have him hitting at a prime spot in the lineup. He'll probably move back up to his customary number 2 slot. Maybe 5 steals this year. Half last year's total. I'd be okay with that. I wouldn't go plan on more. And Drew Smyly tomorrow makes the debut versus the right-handed bashing Blue Jays.
That's right, the Blue Jays. Probably not the best activation or DFS play tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't talk to him in DFS tomorrow. As a matter of fact, if I own Smyly, I might just watch tomorrow with him on the bench safely and just see how he fares.
Yeah. Rendon, probably a handful of steals. All we need from him is to get back in the lineup, hit for some power, and hit for a good batting average. And that's all we need. Greg, better stash on the Oakland men, Jared Parker or A.J. Griffin?
I'm torn on this one because I think Parker's a little ahead right now, but I always was intrigued by Griffin because he was a better whip guy. I think they're both about the same on their strikeout ratio, so I'm thinking of putting like a dollar bid in on A.G. Griffin this weekend in my 13-team whole league because he's sitting out there on free agency. So I'd rather stash him now for $1 and see what happens and instead of taking a chance on a guy that might get blown up in another game or two. So I'm leaning Griffin. Where are you?
I'm actually going to go Parker just because he's closer. And is Griffin on his second Tommy John?
I'm not positive on that.
Yeah, Parker's coming back from his second, so I'll go with Parker just because he's closer for this year anyway. Neither of these guys are going to be big-time keeper assets, of course. So give me the guy who's closer and has already kind of started throwing and all that. And actually, Parker's going to be in a rehab assignment. Actually, he's pitching today, 60 pitches in high A for Stockton. So something to monitor. So,
all right.
Is Jake McGee the closer when he returns to Tampa, or is it a committee with Ian Boxberger, or is it Actually, I like Kevin Cash's move using Brad Boxberger in the seventh inning to face the meat of the Red Sox lineup. What do you think?
Well, it paid off. I mean, as much as Boxberger's owners want him to get a save, he did get a win. He struck out the side, and that was the high leverage moment in the game you needed him the most. So either Cash is a little bit ahead of most managers, and I still think that Joe Girardi could get to this point too. And I think the reason that Betances, who actually today looked really, really good, he seems to be getting his speed back. He looked dominant in his inning today. What hurts Betances is, and I think you and I discussed this last week, is that Betances can go more than one inning. So as
right.
much as people wanted him to be the closer, I think Girardi sees more value in having him be able to do an out or two in the seventh and do the eighth and then get Miller in there for the ninth. And Miller got through the heart of the Tigers lineup, which was, you know, Cabrera and down. So, you know, it's not like Miller's not just a lefty specialist. He can get both sides of the plate out. So I think Tampa Bay, you know, I don't think he never named a closer at the beginning of the season. I think he thinks Boxberger is his best pitcher right now. And I could see a scenario maybe where those two guys both garner saves through the year, but are used in the higher. The only thing that I think that hurts McGee is that Béliveau, you know, going out hurt, took away their lefty specialist. So he might log more innings. Like he might be called upon to face David Ortiz in the eighth inning against Boston. You know what I mean? And then Boxberger will come in the ninth, situations like that. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think McGee is a stash if you have the roster room, but Boxberger is their best pitcher right now. And I think it's going to be interesting to see moving forward whether this kind of thing works, because even Joe Girardi said he kind of wanted to do something similar before the Betances mm-hmm. struggle. So definitely a trend I think we're going to start seeing a little more of in baseball. And, yep. you know, it'll definitely, you know, it'll add value to pitchers, you know, for fantasy purposes that weren't valuable before. So I think it'll be a pretty cool thing to see, although it is going to be very frustrating. So Michael Saunders is going to be back for Toronto in the Tampa Bay series, Greg. What do you think we see out of him numbers-wise? And do you think there's any platoon there with him, or do you think he's kind of going to get right in and take some, you know, have his playing time?
Well, I think Toronto would like a little balance in the lineup with some lefties in there. So even if he's in a platoon, that still puts you in the higher end of the at-bat spectrum. So, you know, this is a guy that does have some power and does have some speed, and that's a much better ballpark to hit in than Seattle is. So, to be honest with you, I took him in the reserve round in that 13-team keeper league, my home league. I might replace Chu with him in the lineup next week.
Wow. Yeah, that's
Chu,
cool.
Chu's giving me nothing.
Yeah, no, he's
well,
not. Yeah, that's true.
I'm curious to see where Saunders sits. If Saunders is hitting, if they get him in at, say, like fifth or sixth, then I think he's definitely going in over Chu next week.
Yeah, I like Saunders too. He's going to do a little bit of everything. You saw that in his days with Seattle. So it's going to be interesting to see where they put him. You're right. And, you know, I think he can definitely play his way into a pretty good share of the outfield looks there. So we talked about Devin Travis. We both like him there. And Michael Franco, third base prospect for the Phillies. look at that lineup today, huh? Yeah, that lineup every day is god-awful. And no Utley and no Howard today against the Rays. Was that today? I believe it was.
That lineup would have got the MLB fine in spring training.
Yeah, it's no good. I don't know. I can't give you a good answer on Franco because I have no idea what goes on in the minds of Ruben Amaro or any of the management in Philadelphia. So it could be never.
Yeah.
Maybe they trade him away for a bag of peanuts. I'm not sure.
That's fine. Any team would jump at that if he would ever do that. You know, it's time. Sit these guys down. Trade Utley. Swing Ash over to second base. Let Michael play third, and just let the Phillies. At least give the fans something. I mean, at least if you put some youth out there, you know, you got Odubel
right.
Herrera, who's easy to cheer for. You know, get a young team on the field and let the fans at least get behind something. I mean, the lineup they tried out today, I would pitch against that lineup.
We give you a quality start track for that.
I might be able to, especially with ways to find.
Concerno meeting with Shin Shu Chu. I'm an owner in a couple of weeks too. Are you you getting anxious?
A little bit, yeah. I thought I was getting them on 50 cents on the dollar in drafts this year, and so far it's looking like I reached. So, yeah, I am concerned. I'd really like to see him, you know, get a little push. But if you look at his numbers from the last 365 days on that Tool on Baseball Reference, it's not pretty. So, yeah, I'm concerned with you, which is the whole reason why I might slot in Saunders over him. And once that team gets Rendon back, I can switch a couple other guys around too. So, yes, I'm worried.
Yeah, I'm pretty worried too. I'll give my concern maybe a 6.5 out of 10 with 10
and
games.
He's not running. He doesn't even run anymore. He doesn't run either. When he finally gets on base, he's not stealing.
Yeah.
And he's not doing it. He's just like an empty space in the lineup right now.
Yeah, no good. Another guy. Beltre, I'm not as concerned about. He did homer. Yesterday? He did homer recently. I mean, I'm definitely concerned. What is he, 36 years old? I would not have invested a top 25 pick in Beltre this year, considering the power outage we saw last year. And I do think that continues. I think 20 homers is probably where it ends, if it ends there for Beltre. Let's say you on Beltre,
mm-hmm.
Greg.
Yeah, I didn't reach for him. I have zero stock in him. I like him. He's a great ball player, but yeah,
sure.
Everything's trending the wrong way with him right now, and that Rangers offense is just they have a different lineup every day.
Yeah, the mighty Rangers, they were really, really good for a couple of years back. It's pretty depressing to see. We might have to end here, but let's see how quick we are. Matt Adams is kind of platooning with Mark Reynolds, and I'm concerned if I'm a mixed league owner, if I have Adams in any prominent part of my lineup. Kind of doesn't look right, and he kind of looks like, you know, maybe he's not going to be the home run threat we thought. Maybe he's not going to be a real full time, you know, solid source of numbers in the middle of the lineup. Are you with me there?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, he's in a mixed league. He's a corner. I mean, you can't have him as your starting first baseman right now.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. At best, he's a corner. I'm really, really concerned with how that situation's playing out. The fact that Mark Reynolds
I'd rather have my boy Butler than Matt Adams right now.
I agree. I would rather have Billy Butler. Would you rather have Kendrys Morales or Matt Adams?
Right now, Morales is playing every day.
Yeah, I agree. He's hitting pretty well too. In 10 seconds, the Red Sox need.
Yes, they do.
And should we stash AJ Ramos of the Marlins? Are you worried about Cishek?
I'm not worried about Cishek, but that ERA hasn't gone anywhere. So Ramos struck out the side again the other day, so he's looking pretty good. It wouldn't hurt to have him.
Yeah, I'm handcuffing him there too. I've actually done it in the league, and I'm actually a fan of Ramos. He does have some really nice strikeout.
Yeah, he seems to be hitting
so
his stride this year.
Yeah. Anything you're looking forward to seeing over the next couple of days, Greg? In the
I'm looking to see some of the returns. I want good news on Rendon. I want to see where Saunders sits for the Blue Jays, some of the other things we touched on. So it'll be fun. I'd like to see how Smiley does, how many innings he gets through against Toronto. There's a lot of good stuff coming.
Yeah, I'm excited about the Smiley thing. I'm really, really excited about Rendon. And Ian Kennedy pitches Saturday, I believe, so that's going to be a nice thing to see. Especially for the end. I'm a big, big owner of Kennedy everywhere, so definitely looking forward to that. Greg, it's been fun. Tell them where you can follow you on Twitter.
GJewett9, GEWETT, and then hit back up my boy Tim here at TKing978, and we both are working for Today's Knuckleball at My Knuckleball.
Cool, guys. We'll be back next Thursday night at 8 p.m. Till next time.